are listening to Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks.
He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
UFC Fight Night 111 took place on Saturday at the Singapore Indoor Stadium. And Betch Correa, well, she is now a viral video. She wanted Holly Holm to bring it to her. And that is exactly what happened. Head kick knockout where it almost looks like was Betch Correa maybe trying to call a timeout. We're going to recap this fight card here on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Of course, we are brought to you by Fight TV. Live stream free and premium MMA, pro wrestling, and boxing. Watch MMA, wrestling, and boxing live on the screen of your choice, phone, tablet, or TV using just the Fight app. Download Fight for your day by going to Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/Radio Influence/. Daniel, here in the United States, UFC Fight Night 111 took place very early on Saturday morning. I got up about 6:30 Eastern Standard Time, started watching the fights halfway through the Li Jianling Frank Camacho fight, which ended up being the fight of the night. Overall, the prelims from what I saw live, I was was like, okay, we got a nice fight card. Main card started, and I guess if I'm just going to be nice, the main card just didn't deliver.
Yeah, I mean, in the preview show, what we were saying was, watch this fight card for the main card, the prelims not so much. And then obviously we are just dumb. The main card was so boring. I started it off watching the main card live and then watched the prelims afterwards. And the preliminary card to me, without a doubt, stole the show. And I feel really bad for those that were tuning in early in the morning from the beginning. And they had to subject themselves to the sleep test that were some of these main card bouts. I mean, you had nice progression for some fighters in these main card fights. It looks real good on paper for Rafael Dos Anjos to get a victory, for Colby Covington to move along in its welterweight career with a quality win, Marcin Tybura to get a win over Arlovsky, and even the main event, which was saved by a couple of single strikes. With that being said, all those fights were just incredibly lackluster. If you have not seen this card, you should go out of your way to check out some of the prelim bouts. The main card, not so much, but the main event. I'm just glad, by the way, that the main event had a satisfying ending, because when you go to a market that you don't go to all the time like Singapore, it can be really rough to end the night with just a bad, bad fight, because that's the lasting image for so many of those fans. And, two rounds in, that's what that fight was between Holm and Correa. And fortunately, with a few strikes, the narrative changed entirely, and those fans saw just a fantastic knockout that made its way to SportsCenter around lunchtime.
You know, this is in the performance of the night bonus has come out, and Holly Holm gets a performance of the night bonus, and in a way you understand why she got the bonus, just because of how devastating the end of that fight was. But there definitely was part of me that thought maybe it should have been Walt Harris.
Yeah, it feels real bad for Walt Harris, because from the second on in his fight against Ciryl Asker, both those heavyweights just went at it quickly. Fight only lasted about like a minute 40 or something like that. So it's worth rewarding fighters that waste little time to put together action. You may, if there's a fight where the referee needs to chastise both of you for being inactive, that should probably disqualify you for getting a bonus. But I still say that Holly Holm deserves it, just for the simple fact that it was the best finish of the night, and it was so good, again, that you're on SportsCenter. If your finish is good enough that you're a Fight Pass card that gets a little SportsCenter time with a little Brett Okamoto doing some breakdown, that's worthy of the $50,000. But yeah, you got to feel bad for the big ticket, because he was, to me, one of the top storylines of the prelim card, just the way he handled Asker with his powerful punishing strikes and ground and pound to finish.
Speaking of Brett Okamoto, I love this tweet about Holly Holm after the fact, because I definitely saw kind of people with this little bit of narrative of, oh, Holly is back, and Brett tweeted saying, quote, beating Betch Correa does not mean home is back, in my opinion. But that was an incredible reminder of what she's capable of at any moment, which I thought was a great tweet and a great analysis there by Brett Okamoto. But, you know, you mentioned about, you know, to me, this fight ultimately did change there. It was, I think, just under 2 minutes ago in the second round where Mark Goddard comes up and says, you know, respect the game plan, ladies, but I need a little bit more action. Of course, after two rounds, they combined for 28 total strikes landed in 10 minutes of fighting. Each of them had 14 strikes in the unofficial stats. And I thought Betch Correa had a very good game plan. Everyone knows that Holly Holm is a counter striker, and she was doing what the best she could to get and make and get Holly out of being a counter striker. But it's kind of like, you know, Ian McCall had this tweet saying, FYI for fighters, when taunting a fighter to move forward to engage, don't get your head kicked in off 5 seconds later. And it just, right when she did it, and as I was watching the fight initially, I just kept thinking, head kick. It seemed like Holly was setting up that head kick right from the start. And yeah, that's going to be a highlight that Betch Correa is going to have to see for the rest of her life.
Yeah, unfortunately for her, thus far in her career, the highlights are lowlights. It's the knockout loss to Ronda. It's the knockout loss to Holly Holm. Those would be the two things you think of first and foremost. Then thirdly, you probably think of a lot of her trash talk. And, you know, 9 times out of 10 in the UFC, maybe not so much in regional mixed martial arts, you don't see a fighter punished for making fun of their opponent or doing the whole, come on, let's fight, bro, thing. But that one time you do see it, it serves as a stark warning that you have to be incredibly confident in your chin, incredibly confident in your movement, and like not be fighting Holly Holm to do that. That was just the wrong opponent to do so, because for Holly, it seemed like her strategy was just waiting in the grass for that one single moment to put the shin on the face of Correa. The head kick knockout was one that you could point to heading into this bout, given Holly has put together a few head kick knockouts, and in other fights where she hasn't finished it there, she's landed them. And then for Correa, she has been on the receiving end of some knockdowns due to head kick. And also, there's a fairly decent reach disadvantage leg-wise for Correa. So it seemed like that was a recipe for how this fight could have ended. But yeah, I mean, the thing about Correa is you have to give her some props. I mean, she put herself in a great position to, you know, have a memorable ending. Unfortunately, like, she did lose, so that's probably awful, but it was really memorable. I mean, it turned the card upside down, because had this gone all 25 minutes, this probably would have been the narrative we would have been spewing, is like, oh my God, what an awful main card, what an awful main event. I mean, for them in this main event, having 3 boring fights in a row heading into it, it was a really rough situation, much like a stand-up comic going up after 3 people bomb. It's like the room doesn't have much energy. So they were dealing with half a deck to start things off, but they weren't giving the fans too much to get enthused about. Fortunately, Correa did give the fans something to be enthused about. It's just that it's really detrimental to her success as a fighter.
Before we get into what is next for Holly Holm, we got this question from Brandon Guzman on Twitter. He said, is Betch Correa the worst UFC fighter to get a title shot? If not, who is?
Ooh, that's harsh. That's really harsh, Jason. Well, I mean, I guess I'll defer to you before we throw some people under the bus here. But what do you think?
Man, if she's not the worst, she's up there.
Among modern challengers, absolutely. And it's hard to gauge this question. Is it just from a pure skill level where you must admit that potentially, obviously, challengers like Chris Carriasso or, oh my gosh, I'm forgetting his name. A lighterweight, who was the lighterweight guy that challenged for the Bantamweight title that was later? Joe Soto?
Yeah.
Those guys are much higher skill level than Correa, but they were probably lower ranked when it comes to how they were in their division compared to how Correa was at that point in time. But it's hard to their post-title fight careers like hasn't been as this poor. So Correa's up there. Among modern contenders, for sure, even among kind of the late replacement type fighters, just because when they've lost the following fights, they've been real close. And Correa's had so many different embarrassing losses. And there's a stat that I know you love to put out there. I mean, you're doing your whole, your little Mike Bone impersonation, right? Where every time, like, I feel like you've done it 10 times this week. Where you, what's the stat you've been putting out there?
The fact of her wins in the UFC have a combined 2-12 with one no contest, which I was thinking about that after this fight hour is over. I was like, you know what? You got to give Betch Correa a lot of credit. When you look at her resume in the UFC and who she has been and what those fighters have done in the UFC, this is still a fighter who got to a title shot. Essentially, she talked her way into a title shot against Ronda Rousey. It's you got to kind of commend her for that.
Yeah, and we've seen that before with Chael Sonnen, and I just think that Correa may in fact be the answer. I'll say she's the answer for modern times, Jason. I think if you look prior to 2008, you can point to some fighters that also took fights on short notice, like Justin Eilers contended for a title as a replacement. I think he was coming off a loss and he hadn't done too much up until that point. But rest in peace to him. He passed away way too young. I think it was Elite XC heavyweight when he died. But to me, if we're going to go all time, worst title challenger ever, I understand the context. He was better than he is thought of today. But I'm just going to go with Tank Abbott in 1997 when he competed at UFC 15. I'll say Tank Abbott, worst title challenger ever. And I feel good about saying that because of some of the shenanigans Tank Abbott went in to post cage and some brawls. And whatnot. So at the end of the day, if we're going back to 1997 to come up with the potential, somebody to top Correa, that tells you all you need to know kind of about what she's done after and beforehand.
In terms of Holly Holm, what's next for her? She could, potentially look at the winner of Cyborg and Megan Anderson, which as we're recording this podcast, it's not official but done, but pretty much everything, all signs do point that it's going to happen as a co-main event of UFC 214 on July 29th. I think everyone will expect Cyborg to win that fight. So, Holm has mentioned that's a fight she'd be interested in. Obviously, she wants the money to be correct. But let's just say her next fight's at 135. And time-wise, this may work out in terms of this fighter coming back from injury. It would be a rematch, but Raquel Pennington. I think that when I look at the rankings, that's the fight that just to me really sticks out because Juliana Pena has talked about wanting to go down to 125 pounds. Obviously, we have Nunez and Shevchenko coming up here in a couple weeks. That to me is a fight that really sticks out. It is a rematch between Pennington and Holm.
Yeah, that's the one I was pointing to at 135. I just don't think you could give Holly Holm a bantamweight championship fight right away. But you still could do it, if that makes any sense. Brett Okamoto talked about how Holly Holm is not back per se, and I kind of agree with that. I mean, it's hard to put her in the same realm when she had all the momentum going for her, crowning herself as champion. But thanks to the lack of top-level depth at 135, and obviously there's just no depth at 145, she's still real close to a title challenge. You got to think her management, and I think they've even said it thus far. I can't remember who. I don't know if it was Ariel Helwani or somebody said that her manager said that she wants to fight for a title next.
Yes, I was from Ariel, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's the way they've been going about it, though. She's had real strong management where they have not conceded too much. So to me, if she's going to get a championship fight, it's the Cyborg fight, which is one you could sell. But at 135, if you want to sell her as a challenger again against Amanda Nunez, I think it would help to get another win under her belt, and she may not get it because let's not forget that this was a fight that played out over three rounds, and the first two essentially nothing took place, and it's not like Holly Holm was taking on a tough opponent relative to her own level. And I'm just saying that based on the betting odds. There were long odds in a main event that she was expected to win early and violently.
Yeah, it was definitely not the showcase fight that I think we thought it was going to be. The co-main event of this fight card, Marcin Tybura gets a unanimous decision win over Andrei Arlovsky, 29-28, 28-27, and 29-27. I had 29-27 for Marcin Tybura. I scored the first round 10-8. The last 20 seconds of the round, Arlovsky, was putting it on him, but just a dominating opening round. there by Marcin Tybura, and you know, Marcin definitely tired down as you know into second round, but did enough there in the third round. Orlovsky has now lost five in a row, and like I can't see the UFC giving Orlovsky another fight.
I would assume he's got a heavy, a pretty decent sized deal as well. So I can't say that either, especially because it seemed like in that end of the first round, it almost seemed like the tide was going to change one, like 360, because Tybura looks so dominant early on. The 10-8 is absolutely justified given how many ground strikes he landed. And there was a point where I just thought eventually the fight was going to get finished. He was just in a prime position, but Arlovsky survived, and Andre appeared to turn the tables with like 10 seconds left. Marcin just looked real, real tired. So that's when I thought that Arlovsky was going to be able to turn things around. And he did win round two, but he didn't do much at all. It was you know, the Czech Congo special, nonstop clinching. And it's just if he's not able to get back to that second gear, I don't know if the value is there. And he's lost so many fights in a row. So, yeah, you gotta pencil him to your you know, upcoming Bellator card. But to me, he's not the guy I would check mark or be hungry for if I'm Bellator. To me, there's a couple other fighters that may be free agents that you may want to pounce on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens here for Arlovsky. For Marcin Tybura, he has now won three in a row. He previously had a TKO win over Luis Enrique and a knockout win over Victor Pesta. That was after he had lost his UFC debut to Timothy Johnson there back in May of 2016. And where you look at where he stands, enter this fight as the number 13 challenger. I think there's a couple fights coming up to where maybe that will ultimately lead to who he fights next. You know, you look at Daniel Olenchik and Curtis Blaydes. That's coming up here next month. I think also you look at Alexei Olenek, Travis Brown, that's coming up, Stefan Struve, Alexander Volkov. I think the winner of those fights are probably where we probably see Marcin Tybura next.
Yeah, I do too. That's a nice trio of fights that you have in within a pretty short span. I mean, at UFC 213, unless the Olenek Brown winner is just so dynamite that you want to hot shot them up towards the ranks, if then you got to give the winner of that one Tybura. But if they were so good that you maybe look at them climbing up the ladder rather than down, that's when you look at the Blaydes Olmanchuk winner. I would be surprised if you match up Tybura with the winner of Volkov and Struve, just because I get the sense that that fight, you know, especially with Stefan Struve, if he were to win that bout, that's a guy who is in a real prime position. But for Marcin Tybura, it's just that he isn't the first guy I think the matchmaker is going to think of when they're doing the heavyweight chessboard after this performance. He's won three in a row. A victory over Andre Arlovsky is very impressive, but the way in which he's gone and did that and in some of his other victories, it's not like he's a prime time heavyweight. He's kind of the guy you pencil in last when you're filling out your bout sheet. So it really comes down to him matching up with one of the winners of those three fights, but maybe not the most impressive winner.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens there. Also on this main card, fire we mentioned earlier, Kobe Covington. He gets a unanimous decision win over Dong Young Kim, 30-25, 30-26, 30-27, a very clear win there for Kobe Covington. And, you know, I'm sure there's probably a lot of people that don't necessarily love what he said in his post-fight interview, but I love the confidence. I'm not going to say I agree with everything he's saying, especially at the post-fight press conference, was asked about a fight against Tyron Woodley where he says, quote, "I'll break him in half. I don't know if there's anybody outside the Kobe Covington camp that would agree with that scenario." But you know, I look at Kobe Covington, and everyone has seen the talent in Kobe Covington over the years. But I think the question has got to be is, if you put him in there with a guy who can cancel out his wrestling and grappling, what's the end result going to be? And I think that's a big question mark. I think the fight that I think the UFC will try to book is him against Kamaru Usman.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would be the perfect answer to your question, because it's going to take a high level wrestler and grappler, because it's not like he hasn't fought any high level grappling artist. He literally just fought one of the best judo guys we've ever seen at World Toy in Dong Young Kim, and he dominated him. There may not be a guy at 170 that can defend the wrestling and the positional control of Colby Covington. But if you're looking for guys, Usman's one of them. And And on the feet, to me, Kamaru Usman has displayed just some awesome stand-up in some of his more recent, you know, the evolution of his striking is great. And then I don't know what to think of Colby Covington, Jason. I think he has the tool set to be real successful at 170 and getting his hand raised. It's almost similar to Ben Askren in the way he goes about getting his success, but not similar in his takedowns. Askren's more of a funky type wrestler. Colby Covington, more textbook, but just as successful at times. So Colby, man, a guy that you kind of sleep on. He's like Max Holloway, but boring. And I tell you what, no one was feeling his post-fight interview at all. But I like the confidence. That's why he sticks out. But yeah, as good as Donghyun Kim is, you put on a fight that lackluster and boring, no one is going to clamor for you to get a title shot.
Let's cut that off real quick. No, that's definitely not happening. But you know, you want to stick out in your post fight interview. You know, it was I think it was Walt Harris who was basically like, you know, just, you know, give me whoever you want, you know, which, you know, look, call somebody out. You know, and you know, Covington has wanted, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos. Maybe that's a fight they looked at. Dos Anjos looked very good. Got a unanimous decision win over Tariq Saffney, 30-27, 29-28. Obviously, he noted about the issues with the weight cut to 170, so he'll get those things. But I thought he looked really well in this fight, and they gave him a tough opponent in Tariq Saffedin, who just things have not been able to go his way in his past couple of fights. But I don't think Dos Anjos is going to probably look at Colby Covington as somebody he wants to fight, because he's trying to get into title contention as quickly as possible, and Colby Covington just isn't that guy.
Yeah, he's a guy that if you are a manager, you want your, if you have a striking type fighter or a guy who has decent takedown defense but not stellar takedown defense, you just want to keep him away from Covington, because you got to give Colby a lot of credit. He has displayed just a phenomenal arsenal in that aspect, and he is going to have a lot of success. But the second he does lose, that's when you're going to have a lot of trash talk from other fighters. So Rafael, probably stay away from Colby Covington. I think you got to look at the other striker-based fighters in the 170-pound divisions, or at least the fighters are going to feel confident enough to stand in trade with Rafael Dos Anjos. Not the most entertaining fight. Again, that's the consistent theme, but it was definitely the most entertaining bout on the main card. It was a Tariq Saffedin special, real technical approach out of him. He had some nice moments, but Dos Anjos looked solid. Not great, not A++, but a good B. And to get a win over a respected fighter at 170 is a nice starting point for Rafael Dos Anjos, who's really trying to rebound after, you know, reaching such heights at 155. It's going to be a while till he gets there, if he ever does, but this was a nice start.
The crazy thing about Dos Anjos was, and I was thinking about this as I was watching his fight, you know, 15, 16 months ago, the guy's on the verge of the quote-unquote red panty night, a night that was going to change his life, fighting Conor McGregor at UFC 196. You know, you fast forward 15, 16 months, now this guy's opening up a fight past main card. You know, you can only imagine by the time Rafael Dos Anjos' career is over, is he going to look at himself saying, man, if I would not have got hurt in that training camp, I'd probably have, what, $1 million more in my bank account?
A couple Porsches, yeah. A couple Porsches, a swimming pool full of gold coins. You know, who knows, maybe you go out there and you beat Conor and you get a rematch. Yeah, that it's crazy. And he was in a nice position there. It's unfortunate for him. But who knows, man? Maybe he gets the winner, Mayweather-McGregor. But on the trajectory Conor's on, I mean, I don't know who he's going to fight in 2.5 years. I feel like in 2.5 years he's going to fight like a Greek god or something. The trajectory of that guy's career has been something stellar. I mean, we're talking about a five-year span of, like, you know, when did he debut in the UFC? Like 4 years ago, four and a half years ago? And he's going to be a part of the biggest fight of the year. And if he's competitive, which he won't be, like the biggest fight of the...
Could you imagine if somehow he shocks the world?
Yeah,
You think Conor is not taking a mental note of everyone who's saying he doesn't have a chance in hell, which is pretty much everyone outside of his camp?
Yeah, no, everyone's saying it. They should.
Like, I would love for, you know, because I've seen the stuff with Max Kellerman. I mean, let's just say somehow, I mean, and I think if he can just be respectable, you know, in the fight. But if somehow he wins, could you imagine him going on FS1 or on ESPN and just, you know, hey, Max, how's it going?
Dude, if Connor wins that fight, like, he won't be on ESPN. He'll be on Good Morning America. Like, that's how big a deal that is. Although he will, you know, pull a LeVar Ball right and go on First Taken and say that. I mean, that's the whole reason why this fight's going to sell so much is it's obvious if you use your brain that Connor is going to lose to Floyd Mayweather. But, and you sell the fight around the butt, right? The butt. But if he does win, you'll be pissed you didn't see it live. Like, that's the whole conceit of that fight is the butt, which is so unlikely. It's a small butt.
It's not a sporting contest. It's an event. It's going to be something. And let's be honest about the UFC. You know, rarely has anything along these lines where it draws people to the television set that never watch combat sports, and that's what that fight is going to do. You know, when it comes to Conor and the UFC, everything you have heard is the UFC has December 30th targeted as the next McGregor MMA fight, potentially either against Tony Ferguson or Nate Diaz. My guess is it's probably Nate Diaz, but yeah, if he goes out there and wins, oh man, I don't think you ever see him in MMA again.
Well, look, obviously, think of how many takes we've gotten within 2 days or 3 days, bro. Like, it's been all over the place.
Oh, look, you are going to have so much clickbait on all types of sports websites with Mayweather-McGregor for the next 2 months.
Yeah, like, totally. Like, within the last 48 hours, I've seen people say that if Mayweather loses, boxing is dead. I've seen Mike and Mike talk about how this is a good thing for mixed martial arts. You've gotten everything.
Is it good for MMA?
It doesn't matter, dude. Like, one fight won't be good for MMA because, like, that one fight.
But what if he goes out and gets destroyed, like, in 2 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm saying, like, even if he wins, okay, if he wins, that would be the greatest thing.
Obviously. But then, of course, and by the way, speaking, I don't know. I mean, you've seen how all these, you know, MMA fighters now call out boxers. Did you happen to see Joshua's response to Stipe Miocic on Instagram?
Was it just a poop emoji? What was it?
He pulled the Conor McGregor line. Who the F is this guy?
Yeah, it's worth. Although, as Joshua, all of Joshua's fights have been on TV, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, who
sold more pay-per-views, Anthony? No, I'm kidding.
Like, yeah. What's he? You know, if you're him, there's no advantage taking the fight. Aren't they doing the Klitschko fight? I think again.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, I mean, look, Joshua's gonna fight Klitschko, and he's gonna fight Tyson Fury. Like, he's gonna fight guys that did, you know, that can do decent viewerships.
If I was an MMA fighter in the UFC, do I want to be on that card fighting a boxer? Hell yeah, because there's going to be so many people watching that card. There's going to be so much attention on it. That night, I actually have a football game, as I can't officially announce that I signed on for another season with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Radio Network this past week. Crazy to think I've been working with the network since 2004. It's already 2017. I was adding up the years the other day after I signed it, and I was like, man, it's been a long time. You know, time yeah, definitely yeah. Definitely does fly. But we actually have a preseason game that night. So I think our game's at 7 or 7:30. So I'll probably get out of the stadium probably right around 11:30 midnight ish. And so I'm going to have to try to find a bar around the stadium that's showing the fights. And the question is, will I be able to get in anywhere? Because, I mean, any place that's going to be showing that pay-per-view, it's going to be packed. And, it's going to be an event. Everyone's going to want to watch it. I'll be interested to see what the residential pay-per-view cost is.
It's got to be $99.99.
Yeah, I think it's got to be $100 in HD.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if it's lower than that.
You think he'll do more or less buys than Pacquiao?
More. Just because of the McGregor aspect. It brings a different. I mean, you're mixing both worlds. I wouldn't say I'm a hardcore boxing fan. I mean, I like boxing. You know, if it's on, I'll turn it on. I mean, we're recording this here on Saturday afternoon. You've got the fight on pay-per-view tonight. I looked at it. It's it's $65 in HD on DirecTV. I mean, I'm like, oh, maybe if I had some people over, maybe. Yeah. But
yeah, Ward Kovalev is just a huge. I mean, like the boxing take this week is, oh, look at all the attention McGregor Mayweather is getting when the fight of the year is happening tonight. Like, that's the takeaway.
I saw, God, was it Kevin Ioli in an article or a tweet was basically mentioning the fact of the promoters of that fight are basically like begging media to write about this fight.
Yeah, what a kind of a dick move, right? By Mayweather Promotions to announce it like the week of this fight. Because,
you think about it, they timed it pretty perfectly because now the NBA Finals are over.
Yeah, I know. They're being selfish. They timed it perfectly, and they're going to do the fight before the Canelo fight.
Oh, poor De La Hoya Promotions. Oh, dude, oof.
Poor Demetrius Johnson. Right? Isn't that fight going to be the week before?
Yeah, that's right. They are planning August 19th.
He's
going
to do 40,000
yeah.
buys, dude. Oh my God, poor DJ.
I mean, and that's got to be the thing is if you're the UFC, I mean, do you just absolutely stack the deck on August 19th if they end up doing that pay-per-view there, which, you know, it sounds like Woodley is going to be on that card. And don't forget, it's two weeks after that is UFC 216. The card in Edmonton.
Don't stack the deck, UFC. I mean, do it. Like, I'm going to watch these cards. I'm going to enjoy them. It's just that from a business standpoint, I don't think it's a good idea to stack the deck.
They should probably just not do a pay-per-view in August.
Yeah, because like you're appealing to a similar fan base, and like that whole fan base is going to spend the first $100 they have to spend that month on the Mayweather fight. And it, dude, like people aren't. I feel like people are probably have less disposable income now than they did like 4 years ago.
I agree. I totally agree with that. Just you know, based on the stuff I do in the bar industry, you know, you see the studies out there about, you know, people, you know, not as many people going out, not as many people spending as much money they do. And I think that, you know, look, did we talk about that Nielsen survey with the median age?
If we talked about it on the podcast or not, but yeah.
I mean, we talked about that, which, there's a lot of different ways to look at that, but the fact of, you know, in 2006, the MMA audience median age was 34. In 2016, it was 49, which, you know, I mean, I think there's certain aspects of why that number could skew old. I think one of those aspects of why it could skew old is how many people, you know, in the 25 to 40 age range actually don't have cable.
Yeah, like how much is your cable bill?
What is it? It's automatic. It's like $80.
Yeah, that's a shit. That's a lot of money.
But that's just cable. That's not including internet.
Yeah, and
I've said, I mean, without live sports, I don't think there's really would be a reason for me to have cable. I'm just such a sports nut that I have to be able to sit there and watch various, you know, sporting events. I think one of the things that will be interesting to see if it happens, if MLB does not put blackout restrictions on your local teams and you could still get the MLB package and see your local team, I think that'll be a game changer for a lot of people.
Yeah, it would be. And it would also like probably beat the death of local affiliates because you got to think that's the biggest viewership for these local affiliates.
I would think if you're an owner, that's the last thing you want to see happen.
Yeah, unless you figure out a way to make money off it, unless you own the channel, which I would assume some of these owners own the channels, but I could be wrong there.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, like, I mean, pretty much every night, you know, I'm watching at least a portion of the Rays game. You know, I may not watch all of it, but, you know, I watch a good amount of Rays games, but, you know, it's just, but that's the only personal reason I have cable. You know, because I mean, pretty much everything else you can get online.
Yeah, well, I mean, you grew up, you were an adult in a time where the only way you could consume media that you wanted to consume was by buying cable. Mm-hmm. And you didn't really have an option of streaming services. But now you have people, and not to make you feel old, Jason, but you did say you started your job in 2004. So, you know, but think about it. Like, people,
I was young. I was,
you were young.
Yeah, I was 23.
But young people my age that are finally getting like their first ever job and their first ever house, they have grown up with options, like real options on how to consume entertainment. And for the love of God, why would you spend $80 instead of spending $20 on Netflix if you don't like sports? Or,
well, I mean, and to bring this back to the UFC, I think that's got to be the question mark of, depending on what happens in their TV negotiations deals, are we on the verge of having much more content on UFC Fight Pass? I think it's great with their, you know, look, I mean, yes, the main card did not deliver this morning, but overall, I mean, it was nice to kind of, while I was, you know, doing the things I had to do for the companies I run, you know, to sit here and have the fights on and watch the fights. I mean, the prelims, you know, there was some, you know, some good action on those prelims. But it makes me wonder, you know, is that the direction we're heading? You look at what's going to start July 11th with the Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series, which is going to be five live fights every week, which is going to be interesting to see if they end up doing this 52 weeks a year, which it was very interesting during the Nevada Athletic Commission hearing on Wednesday. They came for a promoter's license. So, and I have been told that in these contracts, the bout agreements, it maintains that you are not a UFC fighter, that this is its own entity. It was also interesting, you know, when they were going for the promoter's license, that they wanted the managers of the LLC, aka the owners of the LLC, to not be public information with, you know, via public records requests, which I thought kind of interesting. It's like, well, who are you trying to hide that's potentially a little bit of an owner here in this Tuesday Night Contender Series? But, it's, you know, I think it's going to have a massive effect on the regional scene. I think that ultimately at the end of the day, this is just a regional show here for the U.S. and for the UFC and helps them develop talent. And, you know, as someone who does pay, you know, I do the yearly plan with Fight Pass. So I don't know, it's like $83, $84. I do want to see more content on there, but I do wonder if, you know, the UFC does not get the amount of money they want, are we going to start seeing more content on UFC Fight Pass?
I have one crazy hypothetical question to ask you, not entirely related, but kind of related. So here's a thought. I feel like in 2 to 3 years, Dana White won't be a UFC guy anymore.
I don't think so either. I would agree with that.
Do you think we will see a day where Dana White is a promoter for a Bellator show?
I mean, look, I think if he walked away from the UFC, he would probably be in a situation where he probably couldn't do anything for, you know, 5 years or whatnot.
Oh, yeah. And that's probably how long I would expect Coker to be there. I mean, it feels like Coker, I feel like a promoter is at a promotion.
But you got to think about the amount of money Dana has made. You know, if he walked away from the UFC, does he really want to, I mean.
He would want to start his own company, by the way. It wouldn't be Bellator, but. Yeah, does he want to do it again? I think he does, dude. He seems like an addict to promoting. And, I mean, you got to love the energy he has. Like, if there's one thing you respect, it's his energy.
He gets the band back together. It's him, Lorenzo, Frank, Joe Silva.
Yeah, I mean.
It's their master plan. It's their big master plan, right?
They sold the company, and then they're going to just make a new one and just get all the fighters back. Like, on the way out, he just ruins relationships with all the top fighters. And then, yeah. Hello, this is Shmaina White. Like, yeah, could happen. Very interesting time for the sport. But yeah, the Fight Pass, you know, you pay what, $10 a month for the Fight Pass. And this card is probably worth about $6, thanks to the prelims. But there are a couple other nice things. And hopefully that Tuesday Contender Series can be something that feels valuable. I'm just glad fighters are at least getting 10 and 10 to fight or something like that. So it is 10 and 10 to fight on those cards, right? Or
no, 5 and 5.
No, 5 and 5.
Think about this. Go find me a regional promotion that's paying that.
You're right, but some of these fighters are probably not regional fighters. Like, some of these fighters are probably UFC fighters.
Yeah, but I think most people believe that you go and win on the series, you're in the UFC. I mean, look, there's, and the fact is, you know, go find a regional fighter at that can headline a show that's making 4,000 show, 4,000 to win.
Yeah, there are
ACB. Men. Okay, yes.
That doesn't count though. That's,
but,
like,
yeah, that's that, yeah, they don't count. But you talk about, you know, just a normal North American promotion, they're not paying that kind of money, and that's why guys are going to want to be fighting on this Tuesday Contender Series. Because, look, at the end of the day, it's going to be a great platform. You know that every MMA outlet is going to be covering this. You know, it's not like if it's some show, regional show, maybe you get coverage, maybe you don't. But for this, every major outlet will be covering, and they're going to be covering it live.
By the way, just not to get too sidetracked, although we have gotten incredibly sidetracked, another thing I've thought about on my mind, and Dave Meltzer has been talking about this on his podcast quite a bit, which I think would be interesting to follow when it comes to networks like this, is there is a lawsuit by two WWE ex-wrestlers that are suing the WWE for royalties for the WWE network for all their matches. So if that suit is successful for those wrestlers, that's like a giant just precedent-setting event, especially for UFC Fight Pass.
Yeah.
If wrestlers are found to deserve royalties, I mean, what would stop a fighter to lawyer up and demand the same thing? I mean, that to me would be the death knell. And the Fight Pass appears to be kind of the protection the UFC is putting together for the inevitable day when nobody has cable, you know? That appears to be their thing, but what if that's the... Anyways, I just wanted to mention that. That's something to keep an eye on, and that, you know, lawsuits will be the thing in the future for this sport, because there's quite a few malpractices going on or have gone on. So, yeah, keep that in mind as we enjoy the Tuesday Night Contender Series.
But to get back to this fight card, we haven't really mentioned the prelims. A lot of great finishes on this prelims. John Tuck, Walt Harris, Uko Sasaki, Russell Doan all get stoppage victories here. Takanori Gomi, obviously his days in UFC have to be over. You know, probably if he continues fighting, Ryzen would be where he ended up, but a big win there by John Tuck, a rear neck choke in the first round, 1 minute and 12 seconds. Walt Harris, we mentioned a little bit earlier, great win for him. Alex Caceres gets a TKO at the end of the second round to a doctor stoppage against Rolando Dye, which if you watch that fight, pretty much Rolando could not see out of his right eye through the whole second round, you know, and pretty much it seemed like the doctor was okay with him continuing in the third round, but the referee's like, yeah, nah, this fight's over. Sasaki, a submission win where he was a 4-1 underdog. And if you had placed a bet for him to win by submission, that was plus 800, a fight that Justin Scoggins was just dominating and, you know, and just, you look at the fight IQ of Justin Scoggins, why go to the part of the fight where you're giving your opponent the best shot to win? And just and Scoggins on social media mentioned that, you know, hey, he's got to listen to his coaches better. Jialing and Camacho, great fight there. Jialing gets a unanimous decision win. Russell Doan, who was a slight underdog at plus 100, wins by TKO in the first round. The prop bet on him to win by TKO was plus 685. But to me, I think the fighter that sticks out to me has got to be Sasaki. Gets dominated, comes back, and gets a submission win.
Yeah, that was a great fight for him because Scoggins was looking dominant. Like, again, this was a fight set up for Scoggins to look great. If Scoggins gets cut, that is a guy Bellator should go after because he has not fought up to his true talent level results-wise. He looked great up until getting caught in that rear naked choke, but a Sasaki, phenomenal one for him. That was quite the shocker. The Gomi loss wasn't as shocking. Kind of expected that given his more previous performances. Just looks past his prime big time. And it's kind of sad because, I mean, Takanori Gomi is a legendary lightweight. He has so many great fights in Pride. And just a trailblazer and one of the greats, but John Tuck doesn't really care. All he cares about is getting the victory. And, the two other fighters that really come to mind that really impressed me was Russell Doan getting a big win over Kwon Ho Kwak. Just looked great and violent and aggressive. I like that. And then also the catchweight bout that was supposed to be a flyweight bout between Naoki Inoue and Carl's John DeTombis. Naoki Inoue looked really, really talented here. Just a great grappler. The striking of DeTombis didn't do too much damage to Inoue, so Inoue's a fighter to keep an eye on. I believe he's 19 years old, and he's a very, very exciting prospect out of Japan.
And, of course, that wraps it up for UFC Fight Night 111. Of course, next Sunday is UFC Fight Night 112, which we mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show, and also coming up on Saturday, Bellator 180 / Bellator NYC. We will have a preview podcast coming up. obviously I'm more interested in the overall Bellator event than the overall UFC event. Very interested in Chiesa Lee to see how that goes down between those two guys. But, I think that Bellator most likely will probably have all the attention of MMA this week.
Yeah, man, I think they will probably zap more of the juice. They've done a nice promotion on the UFC side of things for that main event. And there are a few fights on that card to really pencil. But this appears to be a week where when we have a UFC and a Bellator card, Bellator will probably get more of the attention. It just reeks of big leagueness. Yeah, like, this is their time. This is, we demand the spotlight. The card is deserving of it. They've got two commentators. I guess one is going to be a commentator, and the other one, Mauro Ranallo, will be on the desk with Goldberg doing the play-by-play or whatever. So they've made some big hires, and I expect that, whatever happens in Bellator, positive or negative, that will be the storyline heading off of that Saturday, Friday, as we kind of reconvene on Sunday.
Here's a question: do we get all the Mike Goldberg usual cliches?
We'll know right away at the first fight when he lets us know whether or not the reaches are virtually identical.
Virtually identical. Here we go.
He's going to say, here we go.
Just like that.
Is he going to plug Corn Nuts even though they don't have a sponsor deal? I feel like Mauro probably should have done the first show, just my opinion. Because I feel like Goldberg was being brought in to do the events that Mauro and all was put in.
It's kind of weird because it almost sounds like that, Mauro might be down cage side with them during the pay-per-view, and during Bellator 180, he's up at the desk, whatnot. But, obviously I've seen a lot of people talk about, this is a game changer. I would not call adding broadcasters a game changer. It's a big improvement. No question. Big improvement of what they've had. But, if they're going to go Goldberg, Ronaldo, and Jimmy Smith, it'll be interesting to see, experience in play-by-play broadcasting. And the only way you're truly going to know whether, people are going to work well together is actually putting them in the booth together and see how they sound. So, but obviously it's interesting. We'll see what all happens. My understanding is that, Shale and Vanderlei both, submitted their drug tests this week. So, we'll see what goes on there. I think there's still a lot of people who question whether that fight ultimately does go down on Saturday night. And I guess the big question is who's the backup plan to replace if one of them doesn't pass a drug test?
Ooh, who is the backup plan? Let's see. I guess Roy Nelson is going to come through that elevator and make his way to the ring, Jason. I don't know who the backup plan, because you got to have drug tests in the backup plan as well, I feel like.
Yeah, look, I think that when it comes to that pay-per-view, I'm coming to that pay-per-view for Lorenz Larkin and Douglas Lima. That's what's drawing me in.
Yeah, and, I'm really excited about the light heavyweight championship fight, but that's not really on pay-per-view. But I'm really excited about Aaron Pico, too.
Yeah, I mean there's a lot of interesting aspects of that. The one thing is they're going to do four fights on Spike before with a title fight that I think is going to go all 25 minutes. Be interesting to see if they can get all those four fights in a 2 hour.
They're doing 2 hours with four fights in a championship fight.
Yeah,
I saw that and I never thought about that till right now. But that is just a recipe for disaster.
You got to hope that Gallagher Machida ends in the first round, and the Neiman Gracie fight ends in the first round. Because if the three fights before the title fight all go 15 minutes, oh man, you are pushing for time,
dude. I mean, that Davis Bader fight is more than likely going to go 25 minutes, right?
I think if you're Spike, you have to be planning a fight's going 25 minutes. So I mean, that fight has to literally kick off by 9:20.
Dude, that is insane, dude.
Because you think about it, 25 crazy. Minutes plus add another, a minute between each round. I mean, I believe for a title fight, typically FS1 and Spike bookmark 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Because I know for a 15-minute fight, it's the targeted time frame is 30 minutes.
Okay, so the math doesn't add up when you do the quick math there, Jason. The 30, 30, 30, 45. Maybe they'll get lucky with the date, like Heather Hardy, who's never fought before.
I think maybe where they were scared was, hey, if we only do three fights, what happens to those first two fights in the first round? But man, you're definitely playing with a little bit of fire.
Yeah, dude, if those first two fights end the first round, run out your main event and then just do pre-fight show until the pay-per-view time. Like, just promote your event. I mean,
yeah, because at the end of the day, it's about getting in. You know, and coming up on Wednesday's episode of the MMA Report podcast, James Gallagher will be a guest on the podcast, also going to be joined by Douglas Lima, who, you know, I kind of talked with him about this in the interview, is if Douglas Lima wins his next two fights, so that would be Lorenz Larkin and Rory McDonald. Where does that put him in the 170-pound rankings in MMA? It's got to put him in top five.
Yeah, yeah. He would. Beating Rory McDonald would put him in the top five for sure. I would think that the only guys you would put ahead of him would be like the champ, Woodley. Maybe Stephen Thompson. I guess Maya. Maybe Lawler. But like, he would be in the Thompson-Lawler category with the win over Larkin and a convincing win over McDonald, especially McDonald, man. I mean, Rory could not have looked better in his debut, the way he just dismantled Paul Daly. So there's a lot in the line for Lima, but they're two of the toughest challenges he's had thus far in his career, and there's a pretty good likelihood he won't even get past the first one.
Yeah, it's that's a great matchup on there. Chandler Primus is a fight that I'm interested in. I think that probably for the most part everyone is counting out Brent Primus in that fight. I would definitely not count him out in that one, because I think this fight in a way reminds me a lot of Michael Chandler Eddie Alvarez one, where no one gave Chandler a shot in that first fight, but we'll see how it goes down. Of course, we'll have a preview podcast later on this week. On Wednesday's episode of the MMA Report podcast, I'll be joined by Martin Vettori, Dakar Close, Douglas Lima, and James Gallagher. We'll talk about their upcoming fights, plus also talk about everything else going on in the world of MMA. Also coming up this week, we'll have a new episode of the MMA Insiders podcast. It's me and Sam Kaplan are going to talk about Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather, Demetrius Johnson versus the UFC, Joe Lozon's comments about the Reebok deal, and also other things going on in the world of MMA. Of course, as always, be sure to give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Follow Daniel on Twitter at DanielGalvonDGG. Of course, this podcast always available at RadioInfluence.com. Also, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play.
This is a fabulous sports big quick fix on Radio Influence.
We got to do this. My friend Linda Cohn, who I've known forever, is going to come here. Are you still doing street hockey?
Yeah, I did a deck hockey game for the late John Saunders. We had a memorial deck hockey game because when I met John Saunders, when I started ESPN back in 1992, you know, we used to play deck hockey in Plainville, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And so a bunch of us got together, reunited, you know, in the memory of John. And we played a game about a month ago.
How wonderful that it worked, especially for him. You know what? Did you see the thing that was in the paper yesterday about the depression and all that stuff on John Saunders? Did you see that yesterday? Was it Deitch?
You know
that
what?
Did it? I think it was Deitch that I saw it yesterday, and I was kind of taken back, and I sometimes wonder, why do you have to say that after they're gone?
I don't know, but I think, forgive me for a lack of knowledge, doesn't he have a book out, or was that taken from a book that's coming out? I believe it is. And so I think that's why it came out, you know, unfortunately. But maybe it'll help others, you know, and just because nobody knows. And also, you know, I'll tell you, this, I'm very outspoken about stuff, you know, pharmaceuticals and medication. Yeah. And, you know, he was on a lot of different stuff, it sounds like. And honestly, I mean, that didn't help him. It hurt him.
The Fabulous Sports Big can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.